on this episode of Still Loading, The Architects. Hey guys, it's Josh, and welcome to this new episode of Still Loading. I'm taking a break from the 40 for 40 series right now, and I wanted to do an episode on something a little different. Today's episode is on Nintendo's in-house development team R&D3, later named Integrated Research and Development. Now, I know I've been covering a lot of Nintendo-related things since I started the 40 for 40 series, but I promise I have some other things in store not Nintendo-related coming up. Before I jump into the work of Nintendo R&D3, let me give you a quick overview of how Nintendo's development team structure works. And to preface this a little, I will not be covering all of Nintendo's development teams with this overview. If I were doing that, I would be here all day. Nintendo started getting into electronic toys and games in the 70s, and with that, their first development team was created, Nintendo R&D 1, also known as Research and Development 1. This was run by Gunpei Yokoi, and they were responsible for creating some of Nintendo's biggest franchises, such as Metroid, Tetris, Donkey Kong, the original Mario Brothers, as well as creating the Game Boy. I did an episode on Gunpei Yokoi last year, so give that a listen if you want to learn more about the man behind the team. As Nintendo's stake in the video game market grew, they began creating more development teams, R&D 2, R&D 3, and R&D 4. Each group was responsible for a different part of Nintendo's overall development strategy. R&D 1 originally focused on creating electronic toys and arcade software, but once the NES was released, they were reassigned to concentrate on making software for home consoles and handhelds. R&D 2 focused on hardware technology and system operating tools. The head of R&D 2, Masayuki Uemura, designed the NES. R&D 3 worked on hardware as well as some software, but we will go into more of that later on. And finally, R&D 4 is probably the most well-known of the original four teams. They created most of Nintendo's most successful franchises, Super Mario Bros., The Legend of Zelda, Star Fox, list goes on. This group of developers pretty much defined Nintendo's early forays into the video game industry and helped set them up for years to come. Now, let's get on to R&D 3. The reason I wanted to talk about R&D 3 instead of some of their more popular siblings is I feel they don't get enough recognition. Anyone who is even remotely interested in video games know who Shigeru Miyamoto is and what he has accomplished. And while I do not intend to take anything away from Miyamoto, he wouldn't have anything to develop games for if it wasn't for Genyo Takeda and R&D 3. Nintendo R&D 3 was created in 1974 and was managed by the legendary Genyo Takeda. In a way, this is kind of like a developer's profile episode on Takeda. There is so much to talk about with his team, so there is no way I can get to everything. I'm just going to focus on the highlights, as pretty much each of these things could be given their own episode. But to start, let's talk about their first arcade game, Punch-Out. Most people are probably more familiar with the NES port, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, but this game was originally released in the arcade. Punch-Out was released in Japan in 1983. In the game, you take the role of an unnamed boxer, though later on in the NES version, he would be named Little Mac. The objective is simple, win the fight. You fight a series of boxers, all with different boxing styles. Your character is viewed from behind as a wireframe, so your opponent can be seen through you. Timing is everything in this game. Each opponent has a different rhythm that you have to pick up on in order to defeat them. Each of them has a different tell that shows you the best time to strike and deal the most damage. This series is famous for its colorful cast of memorable characters, including Glass Joe, Piston Hurricane, you know, etc. The gameplay was designed by Takeda himself. Miyamoto designed the characters. R&D3 not only built the game, but also designed a new type of computer chip that was used in the game, and this chip would allow developers to zoom in, quote-unquote. Basically, it gave them the ability to shrink and expand one object on screen. It could also rotate one object on screen. By today's standards, that doesn't seem impressive. Back in 1982, when the game was being developed, that was huge. Especially considering if you look at the original Donkey Kong game, the animation for the barrels that DK threw were all animated by hand. It was impossible for the processor to rotate the image of the barrel as it moved down the beams. At some point, I do want to do a full episode on the original Punch-Out because there's a lot more to talk about with the development of this game, but for now, let's move on. Now, like I said earlier, R&D3 worked on hardware and did not just develop software for Nintendo. They assisted with creating the MMC chips for Famicom and NES cartridges. But probably the most important thing about the MMC chip was its save feature. This was revolutionary. Games up until this point could not save the player's progress. Since NES cartridges are ROM-based, as soon as they lose power, everything the player has done in the game is lost. The MMC chip allows a battery backup to supply the ROM cartridge with a small amount of power so it can keep the player's progress saved. Ever wonder what it would be like to play Zelda without being able to save? Well, thank God you don't have to. Now, in Japan, it was a little bit different because they had the Famicom disk system, which would allow players to save. To kind of combat this in the US market, they had a passcode system where every time you would die, they would give you a passcode up on the screen. You would write that down, so when you turn the game off and back on, you can just type in that passcode and it will take you relatively close to the same spot you left off. This battery backup that R&D3 created negated all that and allowed developers to actually give players the ability to save progress in the US. This technology would go on to be used for Game Boy, Super Nintendo, and Nintendo 64 games. A newer version of this chip would also be used in one of Takeda's most famous NES games, Star Tropics. Star Tropics is an NES game that was released in North America in 1990, and in Europe in 1992. What's interesting about this game is that even though it was developed by Nintendo, it was never actually released in Japan. The game is a Zelda type of game that was designed with an American sensibility in mind. I would call it a Zelda clone, but it does just enough to not warrant that title. Those familiar with this game know about the interesting anti-piracy methods the developers used. Unfortunately, I can't go into this today because this game may possibly come up down the line. Who knows, maybe? Now, R&D3 did release other games after Star Tropics for the NES, but I'm not really going to talk too much about them. They did release Super Punch-Out for the Super Nintendo, just so you know they weren't completely non-existent during the Super Nintendo era. But what I really want to focus on is just a few years later. In 1996, R&D3 was split up into two separate teams. Nintendo Integrated Research and Development, or IRD for short, they handled home consoles. The other team was Nintendo Research and Engineering, RED, or RED for short. They handled handheld consoles. I'm going to focus on the integrated team, but I will list some of the things that RED created at the end of the episode. The first project for the newly created team was a big one, the Nintendo 64. What was originally codenamed Project Reality would turn into Nintendo's first serious foray into three-dimensional gaming. You could see them dabbling in it with games like the original Star Fox for the Super Nintendo, but the N64 is where they finally took the leap. And while the console ultimately wouldn't sell as well as its competitors, it provided a solid foundation with what 3D gaming could be. Think about it. Where would 3D platformers be without Super Mario 64? That game, as well as other standouts on the system, would lay the groundwork for almost all 3D games. Mario and Banjo-Kazooie were as influential to 3D platforming games as GoldenEye and Perfect Dark were to first-person shooters on home consoles. The console may have lost that generation's console war, but it provided future game developers with inspiration for what could be done in three dimensions. In fact, the legendary Naughty Dog Studios cite Super Mario 64 as a major influence for their Jak and Daxter series. Not only did IRD design the Nintendo 64, but they also designed numerous peripherals for the console. The controller pack, transfer pack, rumble pack, and finally the expansion pack were all designed by IRD. The controller pack would allow players to save their progress for games that didn't come with the same feature built into the cartridge, like the Zelda games did. The transfer pack would allow players to plug their Game Boy games into the pack, and that would transfer data from the Game Boy games to N64 games that had that feature built into them. For example, Pokémon Stadium would allow you to play your Pokémon Red, Blue, or Yellow on the Pokémon Stadium cart. The rumble pack would do exactly what its name says. It would make the controller rumble. All these game packs would plug into the bottom of the Nintendo 64 controller. The only one that didn't was the expansion pack. This peripheral would provide the N64 with more RAM, which certain games required in order to play them, such as Donkey Kong 64, Perfect Dark, etc. IRD would also create the Nintendo 64 disk drive, which was an add-on to the console that was only released in Japan. The disk drive was designed to compete with Sony and Sega, who had disc-based consoles out at the time, and Sony was dominating the market with their PlayStation. The disk drive would bring the Nintendo 64 online, improve the graphics, and allow increased storage space. And storage space was one of the N64's biggest problems. Cartridges couldn't hold a lot of information and were expensive to make. In comparison, N64 cartridges could only hold 12 to 16 megabytes of data, while CD-ROMs could hold close to 700. Sadly, the 64DD or 64 disk drive would ultimately be a flop for Nintendo. The disk drive was originally announced in 1995 before the 64 had even launched. However, when it finally did come to market in 1999, the public was already setting their sights on the upcoming launch of the PlayStation 2. So, after the N64's lifespan, IRD created Nintendo's next big thing, the GameCube. Yes, not one, but two consoles now. Like the N64, it did not sell as well as its competitors. But also like the N64, it released numerous groundbreaking games. Metroid Prime, The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, Resident Evil 4, which I know later was ported to other consoles, but it started out as a GameCube exclusive. And finally, Super Smash Bros. Melee. The list goes on, and while the console holds a strong following now, it unfortunately did not go so well back then. But along with the creation of the console, IRD also designed the GameCube controller, a controller that is still the preferred way to play Smash Bros. Today. They also created a peripheral for the GameCube. The Game Boy Player add-on was an add-on that plugs into the bottom of the GameCube and allows players to plug in their Game Boy and Game Boy Advance games to play them on the TV via the GameCube. All it needed was the add-on and a startup disc that would tell the GameCube how to interact with the Game Boy and Game Boy Advance games. What was cool about this was that it was also region-free, so you could import games from overseas and they would be able to play on your console. Today, it's not too hard to get your hands on one of these, but that's just for the physical add-on. The startup disc is a little pricey. Let's move on to something a little bit more recent, the Nintendo Wii. Now, look at this track record so far. The Punch-Out series, save cartridges, Star Tropics, the Nintendo 64, the Nintendo GameCube, and now also the Nintendo Wii. IRD, RND3, whatever you want to call them, they're just insane. The Wii is Nintendo's best-selling home console to date. The only Nintendo consoles to sell more are handhelds, the Game Boy and the Nintendo DS. This was a big gamble for Nintendo to make the Wii. If you look at the video game industry back in 2006, every console manufacturer was upgrading the hardware on their consoles. Nintendo didn't really shoot for that. They focused more on trying to find new and unique ways to play games. So instead of pushing for graphics, they pushed for motion controls. A lot of people in the games press didn't think this gamble was going to pay off, but upon release, it was almost impossible to find a Wii because it was selling out so quickly. What was surprising about the console was its accessibility. The Wii attracted a lot of casual gamers. You would find them in retirement communities because Wii Sports helped them be more active. You would find them in homes of people who wouldn't normally play even a Mario game. But because Wii had other titles that wouldn't normally attract the hardcore gaming audience, the console found its way into more homes than anticipated. Like the previous consoles IRD developed, they also created the controllers for the Wii. The Wiimote, the Nunchuck, the Classic Controller, the Wii Wheel, and pretty much every possible controller you could imagine for the Wii. To enhance the motion controls, IRD also designed the Wii Motion Plus, which increased the accuracy of Wii remotes. The final thing I'm going to cover in depth is actually IRD's last big project before being broken up in 2015, the Wii U. The Wii U was the failed successor to the Nintendo Wii. It feels kind of weird talking about the console like it's ancient history. I mean, it's only 5 years old, but with the exception of a few notable titles, the console came and went without a lot of fanfare. The Wii U was a different take on what made the Wii a success. As I said before, the Wii was trying to bring in more casual gamers. The Wii U tried to do that as well by allowing up to 5-player couch co-op. Most other systems could only support up to 4 players at once. Since the Wii U had a gamepad as well as the ability to sync up 4 Wii remotes, it could have 5 players playing at the same time. And with this dynamic, it created a lot of interesting gameplay ideas for how 5 people could interact with each other. I think the best example of this was the pack-in title, Nintendo Land. I feel Nintendo Land is one of the most underrated games. It was supposed to be the Wii Sports of the Wii U, but it never really got any attention. The game is interesting because it was one of the few titles that played around with the 5-player dynamic. It was a collection of mini-games based around various Nintendo titles. My personal favorites were Mario Chase, Luigi's Ghost Mansion, and Animal Crossing Sweet Day. So, pretty much all the competitive games. In each of these games, the player who had the gamepad was playing against the players who had the Wii remotes. So for example, in Mario Chase, the player with the gamepad controls Mario. The other 4 players have to catch him. The 4 players play split screen on the TV, while the other person uses the screen on the gamepad. To balance it out, the person with the gamepad would also get a mini map on their screen, which would show where the other players were within the stage. This way, the gamepad player could then strategize where to run, how to deceive other players. Each minigame would have some variation of this and is endlessly fun with a group of friends. Now, IRD did not develop Nintendo Land, but I wanted to describe the game a little to show what kind of opportunities could happen with the controller scheme slash layout provided by the Wii U. Ultimately, the console was a flop. One of its biggest flaws was in fact its name. The Wii U sounds a lot like an add-on to the Wii. This confused many consumers who were not as savvy with the game industry, and it really hurt the sales of the console. So wait, you're telling me I can't play Wii U games on my Wii? The name combined with the lack of third-party support doomed the console after just 4.5 years. Wrapping up, Nintendo R&D 3, later known as IRD, were pretty much the architects of Nintendo for almost 20 years, and prior to that, one of Nintendo's best game developers. I only touched on what I consider were their biggest achievements, but they have a lot more on their resume than what I talked about. After R&D 3 split into 2 teams in 1996, I only focused on one of them, Integrated Research and Development. If you look into the other one, Research and Engineering Department, they're responsible for all the handheld consoles with the exception of the original Game Boy. Additionally, IRD developed other games such as Super Punch-Out, Arm Wrestling, Star Tropics 2, and Pilot Wing 64. I didn't want to go in depth with everything on this episode because I am hoping to cover a lot of these games slash consoles in more detail in future episodes. I also will hopefully do a follow-up episode to this to cover the handhelds that RED designed. So, thank you all for listening to this episode. Hopefully you found it interesting. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the show. Get the name out, please. You can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, @StillLoadingPod for all of them. And this is the last episode I'm doing before Christmas. There will be an episode next week, don't worry. But just wanted to wish you all a very Merry Christmas. Happy Holidays, whatever you celebrate. Spend time, enjoy yourself, take a break from life. I just want to thank you all very much again for listening. Thank you to everyone who's been supporting the podcast continuously, The Hotter Show, Two Guys in a Game, all my friends who continuously jump on to help me out with various topics. I can't thank you enough, and I'm looking forward to the next year. I got a lot of new things in the works, and I'm really excited to share them with you. And thank you again, everyone. I will see you next time.